And it's Matt Bubal in for Anna DeVlantis here on 720 WGN 105, everybody. Let's talk about this stimulus package. As Lauren just mentioned, the president kind of threatening he won't sign it. Investors shrugged it off after a little bit of a delay. But will it get signed? What will it mean? It's a 5,000-page bill. People are still finding what's tucked away in there. We've got more of that next. 720 WGN. Happy Bali here on 720 WGN, filling in for Anna DeVlantis today and tomorrow and next week. Merry Christmas, everybody. Hope you got all that shopping done. If you are ordering online, you're in a little bit of trouble, I would imagine, at this point, unless you're really willing to spend some extra money on that. So we all know that, although it's not passed yet, we thought it was going to get passed. Both houses have passed this $900 billion stimulus bill. President Trump, as Lauren was mentioning, said last night that he's not so sure he wants to sign this. And he rattled off the list of things that are in this bill. We were going through some of it yesterday on the show, and stories keep coming out about what else is in there. While you theoretically would receive $600 per person, plus another $600 for your independence, 17 and younger living at home, depending on how much money you make. That accounts for a small portion of the $900 billion in this bill. And stories keep coming out about other things. Lots of money for foreign governments. They're saying that they're estimating that 120 of about $200 billion. There's a provision that some tax experts are calling a $200 billion giveaway to the rich. So the businesses that receive federal loans from the government with the promise that they would be forgiven tax-free if they agreed to keep employees on the payroll through the pandemic, they're trying to not only should the forgiven loans not be taxed as income, but that the expenditures used with those loans should be tax deductible. So they're calling it a double dip. And that is in this bill, which in theory helps businesses, but helps the really wealthy, according to some tax experts. That whole paycheck protection program, people got loans or didn't get loans almost a year ago. My small business got a small loan. We still don't exactly know how to get that forgiven, what the process is going to be. I get emails from Chase all the time with the latest updates on it, trying to figure it out. And it, you know, for a while it sounded like if it was $50,000 or less, you might not even have to fill anything out. They might just forgive it. That's never come through yet that I've seen. It's kind of all over the place. And I wonder how are you feeling about this? Hopefully you're getting $600. That's nice. But I know it takes a lot of things to get a bill passed. It takes a lot of horse trading, as Blago might say. But the amazing amount of stuff in here going to other locations, going to foreign countries, going to Smithsonian museums, going to racing legislation. The bill authorizes 93 acres of federal lands to be used for the construction of the Teddy Roosevelt Presidential Library in North Dakota, creates an independent commission to oversee horse reading. That was a priority of Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. He inserted that item to get around the objections of a Democratic senator who wanted it amended, but he received agreement from other congressional leaders. So this was all just all over the place. And in Kentucky, horse racing, of course, is crucial, so they wanted this. And it's part of a COVID relief bill. There was a $2.5 billion tax break for race car tracks and the $6.3 billion write-off for business meals. Of course, we mentioned that yesterday, that right now, if you take somebody out to lunch for business, you can write off 50% of that bill. They're bringing this back to 100%, bringing back, they say, the three martini lunch. And, you know, some people are all upset about that. President Trump argues, well, restaurants are dying and hurting. Let's encourage people. Let's give them a reason to spend that money. If it's tax-free, we don't have to worry about that being income that we spent. That helps businesses quite a bit. And you want people out in businesses. Businesses will want their people back out on the road and talking to their clients, taking them out to lunch and entertaining them. I don't know if that's bad or not. That used to be the way it was, that went down to 50% in the 80s. So it's been a long time since it's been 100%. So far, the government has distributed more than $500 billion in PPP loans, which can be forgiven and turned into a permanent grant as long as the money was mostly used to pay workers and keep people employed. Congress said that it should not be included as taxable income, unlike unemployment benefits. But the tax writing committees wrote Steve Mnuchin, urging him to reconsider his opposition. Small businesses need help maintaining their cash flow, not more strains on it. So there's, but they're saying that this change is going to help the wealthy much more than mom and pop business owners. So there's a lot of complaints and talk about where that's going to head. The biggest new one, it's amazing, just as you go on, more and more things that are in this bill. It's a 5,000 page bill, and they keep finding more and more little things in it. And the president, by not signing it right away, has given people time to go, wait a minute, why is all of this in here? And it comes down to, you needed it to pass. And the only way it was essentially going to pass was by a bunch of people saying, well, only vote for it if you do this, only vote for it if you do that. Got to do this, got to do that. So lo and behold, you end up with this ridiculously large bill with a relatively small amount actually going into the pockets of people. It's going to be interesting to see what the president does. And if he doesn't sign it, can they get it passed anyways? Will he just not sign it? And it'll eventually go into law. I don't even remember how long that takes. If he vetoes it, do they have enough votes to override the veto? Does he want to go out like that? Although the president did say at the end last night, he still was not conceding. He made some comment towards the end of his speech saying, you know, the next administration will have to do the COVID relief bill, and that very well may be me, and we'll get it done. So much more interesting stuff to come. 115, 720, WGN. Matt Bobala with you, 720 WGN. Now, some people are saying, wait a minute, Matt, these are two different bills. There's a spending bill and there's a COVID relief bill. But as I'm reading it, the COVID relief bill was packed into this spending bill. $900 billion was set aside for this COVID relief package within this spending bill. I don't know if I have that wrong or not. I'm looking at all these different articles, but it sounds to me like there's $900 billion in coronavirus relief, which includes the $600 to everybody, and some more Paycheck Protection Program, but it's a $3.2 trillion spending bill, or $2.5 trillion spending bill, which was handed out to members of Congress at 2 p.m., and then they asked to vote on it 2 hours later, and it was 5,000 pages. So we might all be right there. But the it sounds like the coronavirus was packed into that, and then a lot of other little things stuck in, because you can't be the person who voted against the coronavirus relief bill, or else everybody's going to say they voted against coronavirus relief. They didn't want you to have any help. 312-981-7200 is the Team Hochberg phone line. Happy to have you join in there and share your 2 cents if you like, or your $600 worth. You can get that too. Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau will join us after the 1:30 check of WGN News. Talk about the latest and what you need to be careful of, especially as we head into the last few days of the holiday season. We've heard more and more that scams and tricks and stealing of things, including identity, is taking place very heavily right now. After the 2 o'clock news, Rosalind Wiseman, you might know her if you know the movie Mean Girls. Rosalind wrote the book years ago, Queen Bees and Wannabes, and that turned into Tina Fey's movie Mean Girls and launched Lindsay Lohan to mega fame. She will join us talking about kids and the pandemic and what is going on with studying and that world that kids are trying to navigate their way through right now. And after the 3:30 news later in the show, Natalie Compton from, by the way, the travel section of the Washington Post will join us to give you last minute tips if you are traveling at all for the holiday season. Lauren Lapka over in the WGN Radio newsroom Are you being a good person and just, and I'm really putting you on the spot. If not, you're going to get in trouble. Lauren, you're being a really good person and staying home and staying socially distant the whole holiday season, correct?
Mostly. I mean, I was living with my parents most of the pandemic, so I was with them for Thanksgiving. I plan to be with them for Christmas. But
you basically quarantined together.
Right, essentially. Yeah. Don't plan on really seeing anybody else.
Yeah. If somebody gave you a plane ticket right now to Hawaii, would you say, no, this is not, and or would you go, oh, I'm totally going to Hawaii?
I would say, let's make a deal, and I'll go in maybe 6 months.
Oh, that's not how it's going to work. In 6 months, they're using it themselves. You got to go now. You got to go right now, Lauren.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't.
No, you're going to be good and not do that, huh? Yeah. I think that would be very difficult not to do.
I know. It is difficult. I mean, I have some family going to Colorado, and I was invited, but I can't
go. Turn it down. You turn it down because of work or because
work and, you know, someone made a good point the other day. Why travel when you're not going to really be able to fully enjoy it based on restrictions that are everywhere?
That's true. But in Colorado, I imagine that's sort of a ski vacation.
Yeah, it was.
Say, well, we're outdoors. We'll wear a mask. We'll wear a ski mask. That's very tough. Now, was that stressful at all with it? Because you said it was a family trip.
Yeah.
Was it stressful that you said, yeah, I'm not going to do that? Because that's really tough for a lot of families right now.
It's, you know, there's disappointment, but at the same time, when everything was being originally planned, I warned that that was probably going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you hear a lot. I certainly see a lot of people post on Twitter and Facebook about things like, you know, this side of the family is going to my parents for Thanksgiving. I'm not going. And then the parents are all upset. Well, why aren't you coming? And I'm like, because I care about you.
Right.
The others don't, apparently. And then the older people, the parents, grandparents are like, why aren't you coming? And they, you know, like, come
on, tripping.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah, just come. Yeah, it's a really tough situation, I think, for a lot of people trying to figure out, you know, what do we do at this time?
Well, and also based on everyone's individual experiences, you know, some people may know several people that have had COVID-19 or have even died from it, and some people don't know anybody, and it just really changes your perspective.
I think you're really right about that. It really depends on how close the circle has gotten to you. Have you known somebody in the hospital, somebody who passed away, or had a good friend who's really dealt with it in a serious way? And also, maybe, it's funny because sometimes you know people that had it and it was no big deal. You know, they were fine after a week. And then you start thinking, well, you know, it wasn't that bad. I have neighbors who their whole house had it and they did relatively fine with it. So then you start thinking, well, maybe it's not so bad. But especially 9 months in, right? You get to that point where you're like, well, the vaccine's here. They did fine. Probably going to be okay. Just get together for Christmas. And then Mayor Lightfoot shows up at your house. Things go downhill from there. 312-981-7200. It will be interesting to see. Mark Carman will be in with sports later, and we'll talk about what happens when things kick back off in the NBA and the NHL is coming up. We'll talk to Carm about that a little bit later in the show. Texter from 708 calls the $600 a slap in the face to the American people. The $1,200 didn't help me out, and I'm single and I live by myself. What a joke. And people shouldn't be yelling at the government for what China cost. Well, that opens up a whole different can of worms that I wasn't planning on going down today, and so we won't. The package really shortchannels the American public. I'm sick of paying out foreign relief when we have thousands of people here who desperately need help. Republicans and Democrats and even the people that voted for President Trump, I blame Mitch McConnell. It's so depressing. Well, Mitch McConnell, you could blame Mitch McConnell for a lot, and I know a lot of people do, and I'm not going to shortchange you on any of that, but he was doing what probably hundreds of other congresspeople did. Mitch McConnell got something for his state. Now, what did Illinois get out of this? Illinois got some stuff too, I'm sure, because of Senator Duckworth and Senator Durbin and some of the people in the House members. They're all there fighting for money for our state, just like Mitch McConnell's fighting for money for his state. So there's probably a lot of little things here that are going to benefit Illinois. There's a bill in here to benefit the live music venues and things like that. So that's going to be really good. We want to make sure that all of those things are taken care of, that all the people that we need taken care of are taken care of. So you can only get so mad at the Congress people who are doing it. You can get mad that there's not more money for the everyday American who needs it right now. But we want restaurants to stay open and the people that work there to be employed. We want the venues, the theaters, everything to have some help during all of this, I would think. So in one way or another, a lot of that money is getting to people here. When they don't have $1,200 again, but they do have lots of money for new museums, for foreign aid, that becomes a tougher pill to swallow. And you wonder, boy, wasn't there, when we talk about cutbacks, we talk about things we can't afford. When people here really are hurting, people who've been out of work or places that have been shuttered, and we send that much money overseas right now, that's a tough question. All right. Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau coming up after the news here on 720 WGN. Pretty far away, it sounds like. Of a white Christmas. GNZ 11. Just like it's going to take a while to get there.
I wonder how they determine the name.
Imagine how long ago they had to order their Christmas gifts. That is a good question. That wasn't real creative, was it? How about GNZ 11? Yeah, man! That sounds cool.
Sounds like a robot.
It's probably one over from GNZ 10, I would guess, right?
How do you get there? Yeah, you take a left at GN...
There's a Citgo. Did they say how many light years away that was?
I'll have to go back. It was like 13.4 billion, something like that.
Ooh. How do you find that?
A really big telescope?
Yes. And they squinted really hard. 134, 720, WGN. Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you, filling in for Anna DeVlantis until 4 p.m. today. We'll take you tomorrow on Christmas Eve all the way up until our special Christmas programming starts at 4 p.m. tomorrow. We start, I believe, with some really classic Roy Leonard interviews. And then we go into Carl Amari and classic radio Christmas programming all throughout Christmas Day. Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau, that's tough to say, is on the line. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Good. Do you have a show here yet, Steve? You are considered a regular, sir.
Not yet, but
you're working
on it.
I feel you might be. So what is going on? I hear that there are, there's always scams. There's always phishing scams. There's always all sorts of identity theft, all sorts of craziness going on. But now, of course, because the criminals are smarter than they give themselves credit for, I guess, instead of putting their use to good work, they find ways to take advantage of anything and everything. And now, are there actually vaccine scams going on?
Unfortunately, Matt, that's the case. It doesn't take long for the scammers to capitalize on what's on TV or in the news or in radio. They're actually calling consumers, telling them they have a better place in line for them. They can get them at a better place in line. They have access to the vaccines that you don't know about. But we need some information from you. Sometimes they ask for your credit card information. Sometimes they ask for, of course, your Social Security number for your health questions, per se. It's just amazing that what these scammers are doing, and I've never seen it, Matt, in my 33-year career, how bad it's been. It's been through this coronavirus. It's just a scam after scam. It's like 24/7 for us. It never stops.
Yeah, I would imagine. And so saying you have a better place in line, and then what? And then we ask you for money, for gift cards. What are they doing? And is this just a random call? And like, I don't know of a place in line. Do they know that people that are thinking about this, or is this just a usual scam on the elderly who think that this really relates to them?
They're actually just scamming anybody who answers the phone. So basically they're telling you they have this better place in line for you, how to get to better place in line. We can send you documentation, but unfortunately we need you to, to send us, or obviously give us your credit card number, or, buy gift cards or whatever it may be. And usually the tip off to rip off is obviously if the offer seems too good to be true, it usually is. But if there's any unconventional payment methods, what I mean by that, gift certificates, wiring money, whatever it may be, or paying by cash, those cash apps like Zelle, there's usually a sign that could be a scam, especially if you didn't place the call at all. So if somebody's calling you out of the blue. But if somebody calls you up and asks you for your Social Security number or your bank account number out of the blue, you do not give it to them, no matter what the caller ID says, because a lot of times consumers don't realize that the caller ID can be manipulated by a simple program, and they think they're calling, government agencies calling or Social Security Administration, and then they realize that they just gave their information to a scammer. Identity theft is just getting getting out of hand, and it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when you will be a victim of identity theft. It's just getting rampant right now.
So somebody calls you, that's the first tip-off. If somebody is calling you directly, asking you to do something, you should never do it, right? If it's, so I told you last time we talked, my mom got a call from a guy saying he was with Apple, and your phone is breached, you can't use your phone, you have to da-da-da-da-da. So right away I said, well, Mom, Apple would never call you like that. So any company think that, okay, I need to call them back and find out if this is real. And I guess a key for that, and one thing that would be easy, I think, to maybe trip up on would be saying, well, let me call you back, and then they just give you some phone number that you call back and you're still calling them. You have to, you know, not trust caller ID, look up the actual company that you think you're supposed to be dealing with and call them directly. Would that be the first piece of advice?
That is the first piece of advice, is actually find that phone number and go to the site yourself directly. Don't click on any links they give you. Our phone number's inside the email. Go to the website directly, you know, typing in yourself the URL. And the second piece, Matt, is that if there's something, they want you to do something in 30 minutes or less, they don't want you to think about it. They get you nervous. They get you scared like they did to your mom. They want you to act. The only thing you should do in 30 minutes is buy a pizza, and that's it. Anything else that anybody wants you to give information or social security number, anything like that, bank account number, don't do it, and especially if they want to do it quickly, because these scammers will say anything you want to hear. They have nothing to deliver, but they want to separate you from your money.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do want to separate you from your money. Okay, so the vaccine is one of them. I imagine that also at the holiday time, with all the packages being shipped back and forth, refunds and exchanges and things like that give way to some ways to scam people as well?
Exactly. Refunds and exchanges, and consumers need to remember that under Illinois law, it's a privilege, not a right. And they're really technically not required to accept exchanges or give refunds unless, you know, obviously the merchandise was defective or misrepresented in some way. But a lot of retailers have become more lenient because of COVID-19, but some have become more stringent. So every December 26th, the Better Business Bureau receives a wide array of complaints on refunds and exchanges, and you need to understand the policy before contacting them first and in fighting with them, because they are required to have a policy. They just have to let you know what it is, and it may not be what you like. They may only give you a store in-store credit, and if you bought an ugly tie there, you have to unfortunately buy another tie at that place. You can't get your money back. It's depending on their policy. So you got to understand who you're dealing business with and make sure you understand those policies before going out.
So that might not necessarily fall in the scam category, more as in the beware of what you're doing. There are rules, and people are not going to necessarily do everything they can to make you feel better about what you did. You got to follow their rules because they're trying to make money too, right?
Exactly. You got to follow the rules, and obviously, you know, educated consumer is the best consumer, and that's my biggest frustration, Matt, in my career has been for consumers who call us after the fact. I wish they would call us first and get information before doing business with a company or going after an offer or service. And we also have Scam Tracker that consumers can check on that as well, because there's a lot of great businesses out there. But unfortunately, there's some bad actors who ruin it for everybody else, and they seem to get the most attention and make the most money and quickly and run away.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Are there still, I know a friend who fell for, so the phone call, go buy gift cards, that's always an alarm. Give us your credit card info or bank info is always a no-no. Are there still computer-generated ones where they're scamming? Would you tell people again, you started to mention this, but about emails that you get and phishing scams through emails, because they look very official. There's links to click. Mm-hmm. You think it's all in one place. What should we be doing with those?
The key for emails or any type of message you receive on your social media from your Facebook or whatever it may be is never click those links, because clicking on those links can do damage to your computer and have ultimate consequences for doing so. What I mean by that is that you can click on a link and they go to a nefarious website. They could put spam or malware on your computer, and then they can watch what you're doing, access your camera, access your banking information, clear your accounts. It's not safe to click on links that from people you don't know or websites you don't have any familiarity with. We suggest you go to the website directly, key in the URL yourself, do the research on that company. Don't follow a link, especially coming from your friend, Matt, because we see it all the time on Facebook, is somebody hijacks somebody's account, and then all of a sudden they send private messages to all their friends, makes it look like it's coming from their friend, when actually it's the scammer who took control of the computer and then is putting spam or malware on your computer. And they can lock it up. And there's some instances where they have that ability to lock your computer up and hold it ransom. And as you may recall, early last year, a police station in the south suburbs had to pay the ransomware to get their computers back. So it can happen. It happens to government. It can happen to anybody. And be careful. Don't click on those links, because that's where a lot of the identity theft matters happen, because you're clicking on those links and you don't know where you're going.
There's a story on time.com from just a few days ago about ads appearing on Facebook. And, you know, when you're on Facebook and you see ads all the time, you would assume, okay, well, Facebook allowed this. This probably is legit. But you can't trust in that, can you?
Not at all. People think that they're on Facebook or Google, that they're safe sites. They are safe sites, but unfortunately, the scammer also resides on them as well, and they can't get it to everybody and everything. We just did a recent study at the Better Business Bureau. Our number one place that people found these scams was on Facebook, and Google was number two. So just because they're on there, just because they buy an ad, a scammer can buy an ad, and it's like the whack-a-mole game, Matt. One ad comes up, another company comes up, and another one goes down. So you have to do your research on that company and check with the Better Business Bureau first and other sources as well before giving your hard-earned money or your credit card information. Or because if they get your social security number or banking information, they can do damage for years to come, and it might not happen right away. And I've seen time and time again where consumers try to clean up their identity after they've been a victim of identity theft. I think it takes 3-4 years, depending on how far or how deep it goes. It's better to be safe than sorry. Don't answer your phones. Let it go to voicemail, and then do the checking on the phone number, see what it is. Don't answer emails with a link in it, because that link can go somewhere else. And like you said, on Facebook and Google, those ads appear when you're looking up like a TV set. All of a sudden, you'll see on the next website that TV set will appear. You know, click here for the special deal. The scammer's watching you, and they know how to get your attention.
That reminds me, Steve, is my car warranty ever actually about to run out? Because I get that phone call a lot, and I don't know if that's a company who just does extended warranties or if that's a complete scam.
A lot of times these are extended warranty organizations. They make it look like they're coming from the manufacturer. Even the envelope will say, you know, from manufacturer, or your manufacturer warranty is about to expire. Please, consumers, do your research on those extended warranties before doing business with those organizations, because there's some bad actors out there as well. And we've seen that time and time again. And make sure it's understand it's not the manufacturer sending those to you. It's an aftermarket person. And they always sometimes will call you on the phone saying, you only got last chance. You only got an hour to call us back, or you'll forever lose this privilege. And it's just all a marketing ploy to get you to respond to them. But if you're going to do business with a company, make sure you check them out with the Better Business Bureau and other sources before giving your credit card information out.
We're speaking with Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau. Do you have a question for him? 312-981-7200. He'll give you the tip-off to the rip-off. Trademark, Steve Burness. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here on 720 WGN. On the phone with us is Steve Burness from the Better Business Bureau, and you guys have some calls as well. Debbie, you're on 720 WGN with Steve Burness. How are you? Whoops. Oh, shoot. Debbie, call back. I'm so sorry about that. You just got disconnected. Sharon is in Naperville. Sharon, what was your question for Steve?
Hi. I bought some appliances at a very popular appliance store here in Chicagoland area. And they said, do you want the 24-month financing, the 0% financing? I'm like, yeah. Give me your driver's license. Okay, so the kid's putting everything in the driver's license. Would you like the extended warranty on your washer and dryer? Yes, definitely, I do. Okay, so I paid it off in 23 months because there was no way I was going to pay that retroactive interest.
Right.
I paid it off, and then all of a sudden I have like a $1,000 balance. And I'm like, why do I have a $1,000 balance on my card when I paid it off in 23 months? Oh, well, that's the insurance you bought. I'm like, I did not buy insurance. Well, the person who signed you up for the credit card in 2014 put down that you wanted the credit protection insurance whatever thing. Ugh. And I'm like, no, I never signed up for that. I was never told about it. And, you know, when you go to these stores and they take your driver's license and they go behind the computer, you know, they sign you up for things that you're not aware of. I told them I never signed up for it. They're telling me that they only gave me a year's retroactive credit. I'm like, I'm not paying for it, period. And they still want like $750 from me for credit card insurance I never signed up for.
All All right, Debbie, hold on 1 second. Let's see what Steve says about this. And Steve, I'm sorry, Sharon. Steve, I imagine, I don't know, I appreciate Sharon, you're not revealing who the store is, but because this might have been a kid behind the computer and an accident. I would think for something like that, Steve, that you'd have to sign for that separately. They'd have to have some records so they could say to you, well, you did sign for this the day that you got this, purchased this.
Usually there's some signature required or some kind of notice that you agree to this. What I advise, Sharon to do is obviously file a complaint with the Better Business Bureau. We can look into the matter. Each one is every differently. But we do hear about this time and time again, and where consumers say, I never ordered it years later. And you try to, there's always three sides to a story, the consumer side, the company side, and then you get the truth in the middle. So we'll try to help you out if you file a complaint with us, Sharon. We'll look into the matter for you.
Steve, what is the best way for people to do that if they need to reach out to the Better Business Bureau? How do you want them to do that?
Yeah, BBB.org. That's our main website. You can do everything there. Look at complaints, scams, and reviews on companies. And we're also a trusted referral agency as well. So you can find businesses you can trust.
When you're filing a complaint, so like for Sharon, she probably has some documentation and stuff. Do you upload that? Do you just write it out and wait for a call? How does the process usually work?
When you file a formal complaint against an organization, we ask you to upload information on the complaint form itself, and then we'll look into the matter and we'll contact the organization and obviously ask for a resolution. And we offer binding arbitration, which means we can have a hearing if both parties agree to it to arbitrate it and resolve it. But most of our complaints are resolved amicably through mediation services, and almost 80% of our complaints are resolved. And if they're not resolved, we put that information in the computer and forewarn other consumers who are calling about that company ahead of time. And that's why it's so important to check a company with the Better Business Bureau before doing business with them.
For somebody like Sharon, if she was going to file a complaint and it went to mediation, would there be any charge to Sharon for that?
No charge at all to the consumers at all, or the business for the complaint side of it. Unless it goes to an arbitration hearing, we ask both parties to submit money for the hearing itself, but it's nominal.
It's not a huge fee.
Nope.
Okay. All right, Sharon. Good luck with that. Let's get back to Debbie. Hold on, Sharon. Debbie, there you are. You're on 720 WGN. How are you?
I'm great. I just wanted to call in and advise callers. I had called into Amazon Prime to cancel my account. And just a footnote right now, to this day, it still hasn't been canceled. But what happened was when I was on the phone with them several months ago, I got disconnected, and the callback said it was coming from them, but it was not them.
Well, that's interesting.
Was it a quick call?
I'm sorry?
Was the call quickly returned to you after they hung up on you?
Yes.
Wow. That usually doesn't take that quick. Wow. That's alarming in itself.
I thought it was them.
Right.
And I was on the phone, and they're asking me my user ID and my password, and they're asking me all these questions, and evidently they were trying to get into my account so they could spend money.
Exactly. We hear about this all the time, but not usually, on a phone call after you call them directly. We're hearing mostly, getting calls out of the blue or people waiting for packages. Never give out your account number to anybody, even the company that's calling you, because they have that information. And they're just trying to get access to your account.
Right. And that's what I thought. And, I thought I was a pretty smart gal, but I was on the phone with them for over a half hour. And then I had this gut feeling. So I called at the end of the call, and I did call Amazon back, and they said they had no record of a conversation with me.
Wow.
Hmm.
The calls are coming from inside the house. All right, Debbie, thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Good luck this holiday season. Steve, you just mentioned that a lot of times when you're talking to somebody, they are going to ask you for some sort of information. If you didn't call them, you don't want to give out any of that information. But if I call Chase or I call Apple or I call Amazon, they might ask for some sort of proof that I'm who I say I am. So it might be what are the last four digits of your social? What's your address? Some sort of information. Never give out your whole social security number, I would imagine, and never identify more than parts of what. But if you're calling them, you can feel relatively safe. Although if you're calling from some number in an email, then you know. Mm-hmm. So what is the general rule on what you should say or give out to confirm who you are?
The key, Matt, as you said, is parts of this information. It's like your four-digit social security number, the last four digits is fine. It's never calling them and giving out your user ID. What's your user ID with us? What's your password? Things of that magnitude. And never give them out your social security number to somebody who calls you up, because they don't, it could be a scammer. You don't know who it is. You have to do the research on them first and make sure it's, you know, who you're talking to. As Debbie said, she thought she was talking to Amazon. It wasn't Amazon. And the initial call may not have been Amazon in the first place either. So it's really to a point where we tell consumers, don't answer your phone and let it go to voicemail. Check out the number first and foremost and see who it is, and find, call the company directly. Never deal with somebody calls you out of the blue. Even if somebody said they're calling from Amazon or UPS and they're calling you, just say, Matt, I'll call your general number. Thank you. Yeah. And make sure you call that general number and ask, did somebody call you? 9 times out of 10, these scammers are pretty good at it. Yeah. You'll see it's a scam. It's getting to a point where it's just becoming a pandemic in itself in terms of the scammers. They're just getting people's information and taking running with it.
Steve Burness with the Better Business Bureau. Go to BBB.org to file complaints or find out more about the businesses that you want to do some work with. Steve, we always appreciate it. You have a wonderful holiday.
You too, Matt. Thank you so much.
Right, we will talk again soon.
Gina, we have to talk to you.
Is butter a carb?
Yes. Gina, you're wearing sweatpants. It's Monday.
So
that's against the rules, and you can't sit with us.
Whatever. Those rules aren't real.
They were real that day I wore a vest,
because that vest was disgusting.
Matt Bubala here on 720 WGN. Rosalind Wiseman is on the phone with us. She wrote the book Queen Bees and Wannabes. It was followed up by the book Masterminds and Wingmen. She's the co-founder of Cultures of Dignity. Hey, Rosalind, how are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's so good to talk to you again. It's been a long time, but none of that rings,
yes, it has.
None of that rings any less true today, though, does it?
No, I think things have just gotten more complex. And I think teachers and parents and certainly young people are feeling it very much right now.
They really are. I was talking on the air earlier this week that I know of two different families who are having kids, high school kids and younger kids, dealing with mental health challenges right now. Are you seeing and hearing a decent amount of that with the pandemic-based learning that's going on around the country?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, we've just begun to realize the impact of the remote learning for mental health for young people. Before the pandemic, we were seeing unprecedented rates of depression, anxiety, and self-harm among young people, really, like, that we have never seen before. And we have just begun to see the research for what's happening. But certainly, and the work that I do with young people every day, and in preparation for talking to you, I actually reached out to my youth advisory board and asked them some questions. And all of them are reporting just feelings of isolation, feelings of disconnection, feelings of deeply missing the most important relationships in their lives, in school, in their families, and amongst their friends.
You mentioned that it was getting really bad before the pandemic. So we understand why things would be getting bad now, I think, at least in general. What was going on before the pandemic hit? Why are kids under so much stress and pressure right now?
Well, you know, we've talked before, and I am somebody in education, and my role as being a bridge between parents and teachers and young people that I've done for quite a while is that I really don't like to ascribe one cause to one problem, because the world is a very complex place. And at the same time, we cannot overlook the fact that 2007, 2008 was when smartphones came out and social media platforms really started to integrate into our lives, and that middle school people were getting those instruments. And what we know is that there is no way that a young person, or any of us, by the way, can, you know, feel good about themselves when they are constantly being told through social media about how much they're not measuring up, or what they don't have, or what they need, or that they just are there. Those social media platforms are so good at manipulating the way we think about things and the way we have political opinions, the way that we perceive ourselves. That we have seen, and I it's really hard for me. I mean, even saying it right now to you, it's just painful, because I don't like to say there's one reason why something is this way. But we can look at 2007 and start to see where the iPhone came out and where hospitalizations for self-harm for young people start to dramatically increase.
So besides the ability to reach people in other ways, what did the smartphone, and I imagine the social media platforms that followed. What do those, because you hear so much about, and you see it in your own life, how much people are willing to say degrading other people because you can hide behind something online, especially like women, journalists. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. And there's, so of course, yes, we are able to have self-righteous temper tantrums online and not see the consequences of our actions. That's true. But there's also another thing, which is that really hits young people and also hits parents hard too, which is constantly comparing yourself to other people. We know intellectually, we know that everybody, especially before the pandemic, was putting their best life, their sort of this fake life, and humble bragging about like their children's accomplishments or, you know, children really don't have any privacy today. Yes, because social media companies have been taking it away. But parents also make that easier because we are, you know, posting pictures of our children from the time they are born now or every first day of school. And so I just, what's happening is one of the things that's really powerful is that parents and young people are coming up having this feeling of, I'm never good enough. I'm never good enough. I'm falling behind. I'm falling behind. I have to do whatever I can to get ahead. And it's one of the things that really starts to go against our values and our principles that we know better. We know like how to act. We do, like we believe, and oftentimes parents are feeling like, you know, I want my children to be honest. I want them to have honor. I want them to have integrity. I want them to know that they're good enough for their character. But when they are constantly being shown and parents are participating in competing with other parents about the things that their children are doing, and then the kids are doing that. I'll give you one example for young people today that's about boys, because we often think about girls feeling that they are insecure when they see, you know, some very like touched up person on Instagram. Sure. That they know is touched up, but they still feel insecure. So athletes, male athletes. When I was growing up, I was a high school athlete and a collegiate athlete. I wasn't following somebody on Instagram who was my age or much younger than I was, who, and this is, you know, I'm thinking about this for boys because I know that this is something that happens a lot to them, but they don't like to talk about it. It's embarrassing to them. Is that, you know, if you grow up today as a boy and you are a basketball player, a lacrosse player, a baseball player, a football player, whatever it is, you're going to start following, or you're going to get information about kids that are much better than you are, that have way bigger followings than you do, and they're getting sponsored, and they're getting this, and they're getting that, and you constantly feel like you're just not good enough. And if, you know, you're listening to this, and you're thinking, okay, this is ridiculous, but the fact is that young people in their brain development right now are the most physiologically responsive to affirmation and approval, or of not feeling good enough, of being rejected. And if your parents, by the way, are constantly focused on making sure, because you're on lots of travel teams and they're getting lots of coaches, and so you become, your identity becomes this, your accomplishments, then your parents, even maybe for the best, you know, trying their best, thinking they're doing their best, are actually feeding into the insecurity and anxiety that your child has.
Whew. Okay, that one hit home a little bit. It's 2:16. Rosalind Wiseman is on with us. Culturesofdignity.com is her website. We'll find out more about that and more about what can we do to combat that exact situation that Rosalind just painted for us. Next, 720 WGN.
Santa baby, slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, and hurry down the chimney tonight.
I think that's perfect music to describe exactly the attitude and the life that we don't want to encourage our kids to be pursuing on social media and elsewhere, and our parents as well. Rosalind Wiseman is on the phone with us. Rosalind, you were talking about, we're talking about, of course, our kids on social media and what they're facing, but you were talking about the parents on social media, and that's, I guess, where it really starts with us, doesn't it? Because if we fall into that trap of everybody having this better life, we're going to kind of, I would imagine, pass the not seeing through that down to our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think young people feel a tremendous amount of pressure. And, you know, when we think about, you know, kids don't have it easier than we did. that we really do, we actually really need to honor, and I mean that, like honor to respect their experiences. Because when we were, it's really important, for example, to not say to your child, hey, even when we, again, best of intentions, I know what it's like being your age. I was trying to get into college once, or I know what it's like, you know, I had X, Y, and Z problem. I mean, there are some issues that are evergreen, like feeling pressure maybe from your parents, or, you know, having a breakup with a friend, or somebody betrays you, or you have a test of loyalty about something. Those are complex, and they are evergreen, except that you did those and I did those. We all did those privately.
Yeah.
And young people it's just really an extraordinary thing that we instead need to say to young people, you know what? I don't know what it's like to grow up today. I don't know what it's like to actually watch it. So many adults in our public and private lives going after each other with such a lack of civility across the board. I don't know what it's like to be constantly given the worst examples of adult role modeling as like the norm of what's going on in our country, in our communities. And so, I mean, because really, I'm not just talking about politics. I'm talking about, again, if you want to talk about athletics, talk about, you know, any kid who does competitive sports has seen a parent or a coach or somebody who has just gone completely out of their mind on the field or on the court. So it is, and just exhibited the worst of behavior. And so when we got to really look at this, which is, and not just listen to me, like if you're hearing, you know, this radio show going, like, oh God, you know, it's just terrible. It's, well, what are we going to do about it? And then the other part, you know, when it comes to colleges and pressure and academic pressure is, like, right now there are kids who are getting notices about schools right now. And it's really common because sometimes maybe you don't know what to say to kids. We teach seniors in high school. We say, so, you know, where'd you apply, or, you know, where'd you get into? And that just jacks up their anxiety. I mean, I say to teenagers to politely say to the adults that are asking them, like, what was your experience in college? Did you get into your first pick? Like, how did you handle rejection? Like, I'd really like to know what your first year of college was like. Because it's just what we are in. And again, like in preparation for talking to you, I reached out to high school and college students. And, you know, especially with online learning, there's just this feeling of grades are the only thing that matter right now. And that's just, and if you feel like grades are not, you don't get a good grade in something, and it's really hard to stay engaged right now in class anyway, then the pressure just, it just mounts and gets more complex, let alone all of the stress that we're dealing with COVID and everything else.
It's interesting because we were talking yesterday, there have been a lot of cheating scandals. West Point just had the biggest one they've had since, I think it said 76. We've had one here in Chicago. We've had them in Texas. I imagine many more around the country. Is that, from you, from what you understand from the kids you're talking to, because these kids are feeling even more pressure than normal for the grades because of the way things are right now?
Yeah, you know, I wrote down a couple of things so that I would remember what they said, and they were from people from all over, from kids from all over the country. And so one of them said, it's just so easy to, well, two of them said, it's just so easy to cheat right now online. I mean, it's just, they were just like, emphasis, it is so easy to cheat right now. And then another one of them, one of the young people I work with said, you know, we don't know what's going on with the young people that got caught cheating. And this young woman said, it's not an excuse, but, you know, were some of the kids who got cheating, have they lost people to COVID? Have their parents lost jobs? Have they, like, can they not put food on the table right now? Like, the feeling of not, of like, you cannot do poorly right now might be very, very, is always, by the way, always very complex, but increasingly complex right now. And for an institution like West Point, which is at base, it is supposed to be the beacon of like the best of the best of the best. Right. It is also an educational institution. And so leaders aren't just formed. I mean, they aren't just like born, like you're a leader. You have to be tested and you have to internalize what the institution is teaching you. And the only way you do that actually is by going through hard times and having these moments where you're like, oh, what do I do? You're at a crossroads. Those are the moments you learn. And then the institution's responsibility is to hold you accountable, but not to punish just to inflict pain, but to literally discipline, to teach. And that's what institutions, that's what their responsibilities should be. But the other thing about West Point is that the norming, because there's so many cadets that were involved in it, is that if you think about the norming that happens in an institution when you're on campus, of like, this is what we stand for. And then, and again, it's not an excuse. It's just understanding the context in which these things happen. Is that for that many kids to cheat means that there was a norming of this is what we need to do or this is what we should do. And then the kids who are, you know, sort of trying to figure out should they be in that group or not, then you get into, especially places like West Point, a huge conflict of loyalties. Like, are you loyal to the institution of where you are actually like sort of distanced from right now? But in any case, it's always really complex for kids to think about that. Or are you loyal to your friends and you don't snitch? Because that is also, you're constantly being told that there's a point of honor and integrity to not snitch.
Well,
you get into huge complexities about that.
And at West Point, where you're basically, you know, you're comrades in arms, right? I mean, you're preparing to go defend together. You are blood brothers type thing that I imagine would be very difficult to try to figure out. Rosalind, I have to ask ask you to hold on one more time. We got a break for the news, but I have to ask you about cultures of dignity. We've got to ask you about how to talk to kids about cheating in this situation, how to better handle virtual learning and all of those things. So please hold on for just another minute. Rosalind Wiseman is with us. Culturesofdignity.com is the website. Let's take a quick break for the news and we'll be back with more next. 720 WGN. Pepe Bala with you on 720 WGN, 233, everybody. We're here until 4. A few more minutes with our friend Rosalind Wiseman. She wrote the landmark book, I guess I can call it that, Queen Bees and Wannabes, followed up years later by Masterminds and Wingmen. Mean Girls became a huge hit movie and musical, is that right? Rosalind became a hit musical as well, right? Rosalind, are you there?
Oh, yes. Sorry about that. Yes, that is totally right. That's totally true.
And you are just cashing those Broadway checks left and right.
I am not at all. Not $1.
Isn't that a shame the way that that works?
It is really a shame. I'm not sure if that's the word for it, but yeah, we can go with shame.
We won't get into that today, Rosalind. It's the Christmas season, for goodness sakes. I brought you here for, well, I guess not for happy talk, but...
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I want to get back to, I want some advice for you on what parents can do and what kids can do and what we can do about all these things we're talking about, but I don't want to run out of time. Tell me a little bit about Cultures of Dignity. Culturesofdignity.com is the website. What is this?
It is. And thank you for talking about it. So I've been writing and speaking for a long time. And then about 5 years ago, I decided I wanted to do things that were more systemic. And to really help teachers and school systems be able to understand and to be able to teach what we call social-emotional learning. And social-emotional learning is really just the way that you manage yourself. Like, you have to learn how to manage your emotions and realize that while emotions are real, they're not necessarily permanent. And the more you can describe your feelings and understand what's happening to you, the better you can regulate them. The more emotional intelligence you have, the better able you are to actually just operate in the world, from managing yourself walking down the street to engaging in school to managing this unbelievably challenging pandemic situation that we're in. And that's the case no matter how old you are. And so, but I wanted, what happens is we often give teachers like these programs and we just say, here, just teach that, assuming that they know how to do it. And they don't. They need to know how, they need to be trained. So we work all over the world, actually, and in the United States and in Chicago. I just did a virtual parenting program for the Family Action Network, I think 2 weeks ago, that really is teaching teachers and parents about how young people see the world, and then what can adults do to make it better. And, you know, so one of the things that I would do, for example, is like, you know, ask, you know, next time that there's a school year, I mean, this is a ways away, but if we go back to school, if the kids go back to school, or when they go back to school and you are tempted to take a picture of them and like post it on your Facebook page, please don't. Just don't. Like, you know, I know kids are cute and they're adorable and they're your kids, but like every time your kid does something fabulous or you think something's fabulous, do not post it on social media, because you are literally creating this thing where your kid feels like they are almost like a billboard of their pictures. And then we cannot, by the way, get angry at our kid for being addicted to social media and constantly posting and taking pictures if we ourselves are doing it. So this is an opportunity. This pandemic is truly, and I mean that, I mean, I, you know, it's been incredibly frustrating. I have two sons myself, like I'm sick to death of it too. it is an opportunity for us to really realize what is it that we need to be able to manage ourselves well. And clearly we have lots of, you know, examples around us of people just flying off the handle and like really struggling and not being able to figure out like just how to basically conduct themselves. And so that's what I do is at Cultures of Dignity. We are teaching civic discourse. We're teaching civic education basically in a way of teaching social emotional skills and regulation.
When you talk about, so, you know, and I do know those parents that post those things all the time and how great their kids are doing and what they did in school, what they did at this, what they did at that. And I imagine when you tell them that, they would say, but Rosalind, I'm just so proud of them. I want them to know how proud I am of them. Why is that bad?
Yeah, so tell them.
No, we were telling the world and then they'll hear about it.
Right, right, exactly. No, actually just tell your child and don't talk about it forever. Just say like, hey, that thing you did, I'm really proud of you. And then if you can actually tie it to something that was about their hard work and perseverance, that even better. But yeah, you don't need to tell the whole world. You just need to tell them.
We've talked quite a bit about cheating and the scandals that have gone on and the pressure mm-hmm. that maybe kids that weren't going to cheat might feel because everybody else is doing it and then the grades are going to get higher and then I'm going to look bad. There's a lot going mm-hmm. on there. Talk to me a little bit about failure. Are we, when we're doing so much stuff like this, mm-hmm. are we forgetting about the good that comes out of failure?
Yes, we are. And, if you ask a parent, like, what do they want for their children before the pandemic or now, most parents are going to say, especially in this country, are going to say, I would just want my child to be happy. But then what does that mean? Because for most parents, that means, well, I just want things to be good. Like, I don't want them to be in conflict. I don't want them to have conflict. I want them to be happy. And so I would actually ask parents to reframe the way that they define happiness. And so it is basically that you are having something that you're contributing to that's got meaning beyond yourself. You have a sense of purpose. You're in a situation that you're learning something that you're curious about. So you see the point of learning, that you have meaningful social connection, and that you have a place to process and find peace. And so if you think about it in terms of the pandemic right now, that if you as a parent can think about this for yourself, I don't have to do all four or five of those every day, but like, how can I create a routine for myself where I'm trying to achieve some of those things, like just to have a place to process and find peace at the beginning or end of the day? You can actually then translate that and help your child identify those things, those attributes too. And so, you know, that then goes to a way of how do we have a meaningful life with meaningful connections, whatever context that happens to be in. And that's how our children take us seriously. That is how our children respect what we do. And we're going to make a mistake. We're going to make lots of mistakes. But that's how they respect us. Because I know we have this thing about, like, you respect your parents, you respect your elders. But actually what really, there's lots of people that we have to show respect to that we actually don't respect. And the reason we don't respect them is because they sometimes don't treat other people with dignity. They just demand respect no matter how they treat people. And kids are very onto that, by the way. You know, when I talk to a kid about that and have an interesting conversation, that's an interesting conversation. But when they respect to their elders is when, like their parents, is when their parents say, like, hey, like, I see your worth. I'm going to hold you accountable, absolutely, but I see your worth. I acknowledge you. I acknowledge that you're different than I am. I'm going to acknowledge that sometimes I make mistakes. I'm going to apologize, and we're going to move on. And that can be really transformative and it's never too late, by the way. Like, you could have, you know, adult children. It's never too late to repair relationships.
Yeah. So we only have a couple minutes left, and we've talked a decent amount about school right now and virtual learning and all of the perils that go along with that. As parents and as grandparents, what can we be doing right now? We can't fix everything. We can't put them back in school. We can't solve all the problems they're going to have. And for a lot of us, we haven't had to really help out with schoolwork in a while, and now they're home all the time doing schoolwork. We might feel some pressure to get back involved. So what are the best things we can be doing to support our kids through, no matter what, is going to be a tough time?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think the thing of saying to them, hey, you know, I was not, you know, I was a kid once, but I didn't, you know, grow up at this time. And so I really would like to learn from you about what this is like. And then if you're going to give them any advice, that it is within the context of what you've listened first about what their life experience is. That's the first thing that I would do. Second is that I would really think about that you're not your child's teacher. I mean, you are your child's teacher throughout your child's life. You have 4 million times to teach your child to unload the dishwasher. But you are not your child's academic teacher. You are their guide. And so what I would do is also, if your child comes to you from online learning and says, I'm so stressed, I'm so bored, is I would say to them, talk to me more about what that looks like. Can you give me more words about what stress looks like, or what bored looks like? And so give them a piece of paper, or if they're really young, have them draw it and say, like, what does this feel like in your body? Or give me more words about this, because the more words, the more we're going to understand what the problem is. And the more you figure that out, then the more you can solve the problem. So we want to get away from these very catch-all phrases of, I'm so stressed, I'm so bored, I'm so this, I'm so that. We want to dig, right? A parent's job, actually, a grandparent's job is to ask questions, right? Grandparents are wonderful for relationships like this, where they can give this wisdom, their wisdom, and listen to their kids too. Their grandkids too. So those are the kinds of things I'm doing with my children. And at the same time, we have to give each other a huge break, because, you know, the people that are closest to us also irritate us the most. So, like, there have been times when, I mean, I had a conversation with my son last night that was, I basically was like, wow, you are making bad decisions. And he said, yes, I am. Yes, I am. I really am. And it's really irritating. I'm like, yeah, it is. It is really irritating. So we've got to give each other a break too, right? Like, holding people with grace, but also holding them accountable makes it much easier to be kind to each other.
Well, last thing then, give just a little bit of advice on getting kids to talk, because we're spending more time with them theoretically than ever. They're around all day long, but we're so worn out too, I think, by all of this, by our work stresses, by the pandemic, by everything that's changed in our life, that at these dinner tables, you get into the teenage years where the kids are a little less talkative. I'm lucky I have triplets that are 15, and if I can get one of them to start talking, the others tend to start, you know, it starts overflowing sometimes, and it's really good.
Yeah,
but if you just have one and they're like, yep, no, it's, you know, and sometimes then you're tired too. You're like, you know what, I don't have the energy to really get this going. What are some simple tips to try to get that conversation flowing from the kids? Because they probably need it now more than ever, because they have less than ever that they're able to share with their friends.
Sure. I would say, okay, did anybody have anything not incredibly irritating happen today? That's what I would say.
Just be completely honest. Hey, today really sucked.
Yeah,
did anybody else's day not suck quite as much?
anybody have anything just a moderately decent day today? I'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's what I would do. Honestly, because I think we just have to laugh about how irritating things can be right now. And yes, we can be grateful for the things that are working for us. I mean, I have a 17-year-old who just got out of his COVID quarantine. He tested positive 2.5 weeks ago. You know, very, very grateful for that. And we need to say, like, wow, that was just really annoying being in your room for 2 weeks. That was a lot.
I can't even imagine. Well, I'm glad that he's doing well, and I'm glad your family is well.
Thanks.
It's so good to reconnect with you. CulturesOfDignity.com is the website. Find out more information about the work of Rosalind Wiseman. It's great to talk to you, Rosalind. I hope we do again so soon.
Thank you. Have a great
holiday, and happy 2021.
Thank you so much. All right. Talk soon.
He sounds good. We'll talk again. Rosalind Wiseman, check her out at CulturesOfDignity.com.
Really can't stay.
Baby, it's cold outside.
Gotta go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you dropped
so
in
very nice.
I'll hold your hands, they're just like
my
ice.
Mother will start.
Remember when Christmas season meant that the toughest thing we had going on was the ongoing debate about whether this was a truly awful Christmas song? I remember those quaint days back when this is all we cared about, was whether or not this is a total creeper song. 312-981-72. I know a lot of you love it. I know Mary Vanneveld in traffic. Where do you fall on Baby It's Cold Outside?
It's the worst. I think every single singer has sung a version of that song, and I am just so tired of it.
You're just tired of the song, or you think, yeah, it's a little creepy?
Well, it's creepy, and I'm tired of the song. I don't know. Just want it to go away.
Yeah, it's just one I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, you're not a fan either. Oh, good.
No, and it always did seem a little like, You know, it's because she's clearly being coy, and he's being, you know, talking. And it's like everything we don't want to teach our kids today.
Right.
About how things should go, right?
Yeah, you know, you just want to hear.
Both women and men, own your sexuality. You want to be there? Hey, I want to be here. Okay, let's be here.
At least
remake that song like that.
At least Uber came along, and now you can think, just take an Uber, lady, and get out of there.
Okay, but now that adds to the question. Did she really want to leave, or was she sort of giving that the way things used to be, where it was incumbent upon the woman to act very, I really shouldn't, I probably shouldn't, I shouldn't. I mean, that was kind of how we grew up, right? Is that men are, you know, trying to get you to, women are trying to say, oh, no, I don't want to. And of course, that led to uncomfortable situations. We want to get away from that. But it's interesting. You say, well, just take an Uber. I think she could have just walked in the snow, Mayor, if she really wanted to.
Well, another thing, she's already in the house. You know, she should have stopped herself before she got in there, right?
Well, see, now that, oh, God, I don't want to go down this road. Because, no, you should be able to go to the house and have a drink, and then when you want to leave, you say, okay, I'm done, it's time I leave. You know, that's a weird, like, oh, well, if you're there, you're already there. You
but
know
it's
what I mean?
Weird that's, that she was at the guy's house.
Oh, don't say that.
I mean, you know, did he invite her over? There's so much involved in that. It just can go on and on and on.
Oh, I opened up that box, didn't I?
You just don't want your kids to hear that song, I guess.
Kids, turn it off.
Speaking of the teenagers, you were just talking about that.
Turn it off.
You should have asked the last guest about that song.
I don't want to burst either one of your bubbles, but people still play hard to get.
Right. They do.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad. See, you can say that. I cannot say that.
Well, we don't. We've been married a long time, right,
well,
Kim?
Well, no, but, I mean, but you can't. Like,
we can't have any fun anymore.
Don't you think, Kim, that coming out of my mouth would not have sounded as sensible as it did coming out of your mouth?
Well, everything always sounds more sensible coming out of my mouth, but,
really,
you know.
I set that up on a tee for you.
You know, but if
you're
you watch
welcome.
All these Hallmark Christmas movies, that's what it's all about.
The woman's playing coy and the man's
I mean,
trying
but
to
they never
into
stay,
it.
They
the
never stay overnight in
well,
the Hallmark
no.
movies.
Oh, no, never.
They don't even
but they
barely
still...
kiss.
Do they still have, like, separate beds like the Flintstones?
Like the Petries?
Yeah, Rob and Laura?
No, not quite that bad.
Well, you're right. People do still play coy, but we don't want to encourage that, right? I mean, I don't want my daughter to grow up feeling like she has to be that way. She needs to own who she is and what she wants. And if she wants to be there, she should be there. And if she doesn't,
just don't tell you about it.
Mary, you are not helping me at all. This is terrible.
Hey, you know, I know what I did when I was younger, and I know what my
we
kids probably did as well.
We did when we were younger, and
yes.
We do not want our children doing the same thing for the most part, right?
But you know they do.
Oh, God.
You know,
and like
you
your
find
other guest said, social media makes it 10 times worse.
Oh, mm-hmm. I thank the heavens every day that when I grew up, we did not have smartphones.
Me too.
No kidding.
Oh, my gosh, the trouble we would have gotten into. I mean, maybe we would have learned quickly. But I really understand what Rosalind's saying, that all these statistics changed after 2007 when the smartphones started coming out and the access to all these things. You know, I think we were just unprepared as a population and certainly as parents for what it was going to mean when our kids suddenly had access to all of this stuff.
And when we had access to Facebook, what happens?
Do you think it's been a problem for adults as much? I think it does lead to like how? Like the depression of always thinking other people have things better than we do.
Yeah, you're always competing against a girlfriend whose kids are better than your kids, you know?
Do you feel that way? Did you have a lot of friends who were posting a lot of stuff about their kids?
Yeah, it was like, stop. You know? I hate when people do a lot of that. And like she said, it damages kids, I think, in a way.
Well, it's interesting because the kids aren't on Facebook. You know what I mean? Us old people are on Facebook.
Right. We're the
Facebook.
Ones on Facebook now.
Our kids are on Instagram or Snapchat or whatever.
And I can see posting cute pictures, but, you know, I have to brag about my son. I never do. It's like, obviously you do.
This sounds pretty deep-seated,
Mayor. I have done it. I have done it, you know, so, but... Some people do it a lot.
And now when you do it, do you think, I can't believe I became this person? You're like, you know what? It's about time I said something.
Well, that's when I usually do it, when I'm tired of hearing about everyone else and I want to do it.
Do you ever think about just not looking at it? Or like, you know, if there's a
particular I think you do, don't you? You know, when somebody, the same person is posting over and over and it's like, oh, here they are again.
I unfollow them on Facebook.
Yeah, or that's unfollow them.
Because
yeah.
you can, you know, you
or
can
Instagram.
Do that without them knowing that you, you know, you're they're still friends with, but they don't know that you're not seeing their feed. You just block that out of your life. You don't
need
that.
Sometimes I cringe when I see, you know, when they say you posted this a year ago or this or that, and I look at, I'm like, why did I put that up there? That was so stupid.
I've seen things
your memories come up and you're like,
why did you put that up?
I've seen things that I wrote like 10 or 11 years ago, like about the $15 wage. And I thought, oh, I was writing that back then. And then you're kind of like, oh, gosh. And I wonder, there'll be a lot of people with memories of what they did with their kids and stuff. And I wonder if they'll look back and think, God, I was that person back then. Or maybe they won't because they're that person and they don't see that.
Just don't repost.
Then repost. Look at how great they were 10 years ago. They're still great today. Your kids suck. Yeah. Well, what are you going to do?
Well, I think some people are changing. Like, you know, my daughter-in-law doesn't like to post pictures of her children, you know, on Facebook or anything.
Yeah.
And so now I can't really post them either. And they're so cute. I really want to. So that's hard.
Have you asked
what do you
her
do?
If you could?
So, I always do. If I do post something, like if it's a birthday or something, can I post a picture, you know, of Valerie? And then she'll say if I, you know, she'll kind of give me permission. But that's hard.
What if she said no?
Well, I wouldn't do it. You know, I got to respect what she wants me to do.
Well, you did ask, so you got to be prepared for the answer.
I do ask.
But then on the inside,
I'm like, gosh darn it, that kid, she's so cute. I want to show her to everybody, and I'm the grandma.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that kind of is like eminent domain, isn't it? You can just take whatever you want.
Yeah, no, you kind of can't.
Not if you want to keep visiting the grandchild.
Now, with my daughter, it's a different story. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, you brought her into this world. You'll do what you want
on
social media.
Daughter-in-law, you got to be careful.
Yeah, that's true. You got the son to deal with there.
Mm-hmm.
What told me the other day, but what are you doing for the holidays? Will you guys stay distanced or have you been around each other enough that you
we've
feel
been
safe?
Around each other a lot, so we are going to see each other, and I'm going to see my mother-in-law with a mask, so you know
for a lot of people it, you know, we got to look at the good, right? So for a lot of people, it's like you maybe there's people you didn't look forward to seeing every year at the holidays, and now you have a built-in great excuse. Or if you still have to see them, you have a reason to distance or maybe keep it shorter. There's all sorts of things, ways that you can look at the positives of this. Now, if it's somebody you're dying to see and you haven't seen, I could see where it really depresses you. But, you know, we got to take the good with the bad and take them both. And there you have. Okay. 312-981-7200 is the number. After the 3 o'clock news, we are going to check in with our friend Ben Bradley over at WGN-TV. Today is Festivus. Ben also wants to talk about his favorite stories of the year. We'll do that after.
Just like the ones I used to know.
We're going to keep dreaming this year. We're not getting a white Christmas. We're getting a cold Christmas, it sounds like. But some snow a little bit maybe during the day. They were saying in the weather report just now on Sunday or on Christmas Day. But looks like it's going to be mostly what you got right now, everybody. Listener says, baby, it's cold outside. You're so jaded. Where's your stinking romance? My stinking romance. I think any song where they say, what's in this drink, cannot be categorized as romantic. Matt Bubala here with you in for Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN. Mark Carmen's over in WGN Radio Sports. Bulls start tonight, Carm. Any reason for us to expect that this will be better than last year?
Not particularly, Matt, but they do have a new coach who...
That's right. Forgot about that.
Billy Donovan should make a difference. I mean, Jim Boylan was not an asset for the Bulls organization, if you will, and they do have younger players who in theory should be getting better. Plus, I am interested in their number 4 overall draft pick in the first round, Patrick Williams. He's 19 but looks like he's 38 on some level. He's got an NBA body already, so it'll be interesting to see what he does. I'm interested to see like what the Bulls actually have here as far as their talent. It was hard to figure out the past couple of years with Jim Boylan coaching them.
Yeah. Okay. And you hosted the Three Bears. What is today? Is today Wednesday?
Today's Wednesday. Last night, Hamp and OB were rolling, baby.
Yeah. Are they, you know, we talked to OB on Monday, and it was kind of the happiest I'd heard OB in my life. Although, you know, he's you know, and with every good comes the bad, and with OB, it's kind of like, where the heck has this been? I've been telling you this for years. Move Trubisky out of the pocket, all those things. And so now he sees they finally found it, and he gets really annoyed at anybody saying, let's just losing at draft picks. You're here to win. Go out and win and see what happens. But what are they thinking about this weekend against a very bad team and the prospects for the playoffs?
So I think OB is optimistic that they can beat Jacksonville and even get Green Bay and get into the playoffs, and you never know. And he's also optimistic that no matter, or he's hopeful, that no matter what happens, Matt Nagy, Ryan Pace, and Mitchell Trubisky will all be out the door at the end of the season. So it's a conflicted OB right now, because he wants change, but he also wants to see his Bears win. They obviously have a great chance against Jacksonville, who has every incentive to lose and get the number one overall draft pick after the Jets won this week. They were winless. Now they've got one win. Jacksonville has the losing tiebreaker for Trevor Lawrence, who's a stud college quarterback who could save your franchise. So and Jacksonville's debating between Gardner Minshew and old man Mike Glennon to start against the Bears. Again, 13 losses in a row. So it should be, you know, a positive weekend for the Bears, Matt. But Jacksonville's also had a lot of close games. They played the Vikings within three. So there's, you know, the NFL is the NFL. Anything can happen.
And Gardner Minshew was going to be a savior for them at the beginning of the season, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he was great last year, and I actually interviewed him at the Super Bowl, which seems forever ago last year, and he was just the coolest, easiest-going guy. And I'm like, how in the world did the Bears not take this guy? He was a sixth-round draft pick. You had every right to take a flyer on a quarterback, and he would have fit so well in Chicago, but it's gone south for him this year, so it doesn't feel quite as bad.
You were saying OB is hoping that they clean house at the end of this year. If they win these, certainly the last two games, if they beat the Packers, if they make the playoffs, there's no chance that they clean house, right?
It'd be really interesting, because if that happens, that means that Trubisky played well this week, most likely, and next week, right?
Yeah.
And so Trubisky, in essence, just saved Matt Nagy his job and Ryan Pace, and now he's a free agent. He probably ends up out the door in that scenario, because he probably plays well enough that someone's willing to pay him, and the Bears are not going to match that because, you know, he's a free agent. And maybe Mitchell Trubisky wants to go elsewhere and have a fresh start. Nobody knows the answer to that. So it's interesting that Trubisky's in this spot right now where, in theory, he could actually save those guys' jobs and end up somewhere else.
With all of the down parts of Trubisky, though, he's not a pocket quarterback. He is an accurate downfield. He doesn't see the whole field. Everything that OB would list for the next 20 minutes. Will some other team just throw a bunch of money at him because he won a few games at the end of the year for the Bears?
So he's not perfect, right? But let's look around. Last year, the MVP, Lamar Jackson, he's not a pocket quarterback. He's had a lot of success. Trubisky, to me, looks a whole lot different after getting benched, coming back. He's got an anger to him right now, and sort of, I would call it a groundedness in, this is what I do, this is how I play, and this is good enough to win in the league, that some team might look at and think, you know what, he can win here. How about, you know, what's New England going to do?
That's what we were talking about earlier this week, is, you know, Belichick will be the one to make a superstar out of him.
Right.
We'll be crying forever. You don't think the Bears would throw the money at him necessary to keep him if they, I mean, because they're not going to get some great quarterback most likely in the draft unless it's a sleeper. So what do they do then?
You're in a bad position.
Yeah.
Do you extend him last year and give him the fifth-year option? You could have done that, but it was for a lot of money.
Yeah. It didn't make sense last year.
It didn't, but now you're in a spot, see, I'm going to set a hard line. I will pay you, I'll give you a 2-year deal at whatever they think is fair, $20 million, $30 million.
But if somebody offers four, then he's got to go, because it's only smart economics.
Right. And then now you're back to Nick Foles and whoever you draft, and that's not pretty. So it's a tough spot for the Bears right now.
Mark Carman will be in the sports department all afternoon. You got some basketball for us tonight too, Carm?
I will. We got the Wildcats coming up. Northwestern with a huge, huge win, you know, beating Michigan State, number 4 in the country, which was just completely and utterly unbelievable. Hadn't done that since 1979, 41 years, when Magic Johnson was running around. They got Indiana tonight, 7:15, our pregame.
Many Christmases ago, I went to buy a doll for my son. I reached for the last one they had, but so did another man. As I rained blows upon him, I realized there had to be another way.
What happened to the doll?
It was destroyed. But out of that, a new holiday was born. A Festivus for the rest of us.
Today is Festivus. I don't remember there being an exact date involved when I watched the episode, Ben Bradley at WGN TV News. When did the date come part of it? Was this the date they said in the episode?
I don't know, but I believe the internet has declared today yes. Festivus. So it I'm going with it. And don't take it away from me, no, because if there's any year that calls for the airing of grievances, yeah, it's this year.
I was going to say, you're really jacked up about this. You and I were emailing earlier today, deciding what to talk about, and you come up with all these ideas. You're like, or we could air grievances because it's Festivus.
Well, I was like, you know, we could talk about COVID again. We could talk about vaccinations. We could talk about, you know, Chicago police. We could do all the things that were... No!
Ben is going to air it out, people. Stand back!
I got a problem with you people! Let's start!
Get out the poll.
Let's start with those of you who love to say, why doesn't the media cover this? Why don't you ever report on this?
Ben, why don't you ever tell any positive stories? Can you answer that, please?
And then you follow up and they say, well, I don't actually watch the news.
I quit watching you years ago. Yeah, I just it's know kind of, you're not doing it.
New rule, right? Like, you know, there's that old saying, if you don't vote, you lose your right to complain
about
politicians. If you don't watch the news or read the newspaper, reputable, then you lose your ability to complain.
Yeah.
If you're not going to be an engaged citizen, to hell with you.
Wow. Wow.
Don't even get me started, kid.
And send your emails to Ben Bradley at WGNTV.com.
No, you can send them to T Skilling.
I was going to say, is there a grievance about Tom that we're going to air out now?
No. I mean,
go
you
ahead,
know.
Throw a coworker. Pick one coworker, throw him under the bus. Go.
Sorry, is this connection off?
Oh,
is this
wow.
working? No, I've got some pretty great coworkers. I will say, I was very encouraged. Last night, a friend sent me video of Skilling pitching back to Ray and Lourdes.
Okay.
And Skilling appeared to briefly forget Ray's name. And I had such a good laugh because when we used to play Skillingo, when I was filling in on the night shift, which for those of you who don't know, Skillingo is the bingo game that I came up with where you try to guess what weather phrases or Skillingisms he's going to say on TV, and whoever guesses the most correctly wins. Yeah. So Micah and I would play this every single night.
And what people don't know is you two are drinking under the desk.
Oh, yeah. No,
on.
Every time you get one right, you take a shot. Yeah. I thought that was a given.
Oh, okay.
One of my favorite, it wasn't a phrase, but it was a Skillingism, was forgets Ben's name on tossback. And you'd hear, no, back to you, Micah. And yeah.
Oh, that really
and
nice
now,
guy.
In fairness, nice Tom guy. Is working from home in the studio that they built for him at home. He doesn't have access to all the right things, and you're not sitting there. So it's like, and we have kind of had a revolving door of anchors. Thanks, Joe Donlan.
Yeah. What a quitter he is. Is he the person that you're throwing under?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with, as long as we're airing grievances, let's go all the way back to Sapelsa, who told me to come over to WGN. It's great. And then he retired.
Yeah. Pretty much right after, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He brought you over just so you could start doing the hits on the WGN radio. Take that over for him.
Exactly.
He suckered you right into that one.
So what are your grievances, Matt?
You know, I don't know. It's been such a rough, terrible year in so many ways that it's hard to come up with just one, I suppose. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess it would be if I have one grievance, like a superficial grievance for the year, it's that the Cubs are just kind of throwing everything in the toilet, I feel like, right now. I mean, I love that they won a World Series. I grew up a Cubs fan my whole life, was dying for that.
Yeah.
But then, I guess sort of like the Bears, it's like you have this great team. This is all we get. The Red Sox win it multiple times. The Giants win it multiple times. Yankees win it every year. What we get one, and then that's it, and this is it. And now we're back to being the Cubs again.
Yeah, well, and now the Bears are essentially doing the same thing. I love how we all talk about, hey, they could get to the playoffs after.
They could.
Yeah. You know what? And I could also weigh 175 pounds.
But I'm not going to.
Well, you know that would involve a ton of work and a big change in mating
habits. With the Bears, it's really easy to just get that Kool-Aid back out of the fridge and pour a big glass. You know what I mean? 1 week is all it takes. Like, hey, they're good again.
Yeah, we're back. We're back.
Yeah.
So,
well, tell me some of your favorite. Do you have a favorite story from the past year? Because a lot of it was, I mean, we had such tough stuff with the racial unrest and social justice and the pandemic.
The economic impact of the pandemic.
Everything else.
The lives lost. Yeah. And it's one of the reasons why I'm happy Sapelsa talked me into coming over to GN, because we have one of the many great things is we have a feature reporter every day on our afternoon news, Aaron Ivory, who does such an incredible job of just finding, you know, characters in the community and places that make a difference and sharing those stories. And they've really kind of helped get me through some very tough newscasts, because let's face it, you know, we're not covering water skiing squirrels this year. You know, it's been a lot of difficulty, and I actually just tweeted out a bunch of my favorite stories that we've covered this year, and I think if I had to name one, it would be a story Aaron did at Hinsdale Hospital about parents who the mom was on bed rest early in the pandemic. She was pregnant, and there were, you know, significant concerns, and because of hospital COVID restrictions, her husband couldn't visit her, and she was in there for a few months, you know, up until she was going to give birth. And every single night he would, after work, come outside Hinsdale Hospital, set up a little table and a chair, some music, wine, FaceTime, and he'd have a dinner date with his wife, who was upstairs on bed rest, through FaceTime. It was a beautiful story. So I just tweeted that one out.
And did she have the baby yet?
She did have the baby, and last Aaron updated us. Everything was going great.
Oh, that's awesome. So, that's rough.
Yeah. There was another good story that Aaron did early in the pandemic. You remember when people used to go out on their balconies in the city and sing?
Or applaud for the healthcare first responders, workers. Things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was a husband who had been pretty ill with COVID-19, recovered, and then was quarantined away from his wife. And so he would show up with a trumpet each night right at sunset and play.
And then she divorced him because she hates the trumpet. It took a weird turn, but it was really nice for a while.
Oh, thanks. Wah, wah, wah.
That's what he kept playing. That's what drove her nuts.
Boy, this has been an uplifting segment.
I have to bring
it
back to Festivus.
Yes.
Yeah. Ben Bradley is the anchor at the Channel 9 4 p.m. news. He's an investigative reporter as well. It's always great talking with you, Ben. I know you're going to... Are you going to be back with us next week?
Yeah, I'm here next week. I'm off for a few days for Christmas. So Merry Christmas to you and to all of the great WGN radio listeners.
All of you. If you guys like Ben Bradley, follow him at Ben Bradley TV. If you don't like Ben Bradley, at Ben Bradley MP on Twitter, and yell at that guy.
Love it.
Ben, thanks so much. Have a great day. We've got the news coming up next, 720 WGN.
Is that you, Santa Claus? Gifts I'm preparing for some Christmas sharing, but I pause because hang in my stocking, I can hear a knocking. Is that you, Santa Claus?
339 720 WGN. Matt Bubala here with you, in for Anna DeVlantis. Natalie Compton is the travel reporter for Washington Post's travel destination, By the Way. You can find that at WashingtonPost.com. And she joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Natalie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Festivus.
It is Festivus today. Did you air your grievances?
I guess I had been without knowing it was a holiday, so seasonal appropriate.
Yes, very good. You just intuitively knew what to do today. You've been writing a little bit, you know, we're all supposed to be staying home. We shouldn't be traveling in theory, but some people are. You shared earlier this week, I know, some TSA tips on how to travel as best you can and as safely as you can. Do you have any quick tips for people that might be headed to O'Hare or Midway over the next couple of days here in Chicago?
Absolutely, and you're right in that there are many people who are traveling. Just yesterday, there were about 1 million people who passed through American airports, and that's been the trend since last Friday. So you are probably going to be around many other people if you do fly, although right now the CDC is saying the best thing to do is stay home because As you know, hospitalizations are surging across the country, but some of the tips that you can do start before you leave for the airport. You want to make sure that you're packing very smart so that you don't get stopped at the checkpoint. You don't want to hold up the line and be around other people longer. You don't want TSA to have to go through all your stuff and touch everything. So make sure you're packing the right stuff, and you can check by going to the TSA website and going through their database to be like, can I bring this cheese? Can I bring this eggnog, whatever? And they also have an app, or if you're a Twitter fan, go to Ask TSA and tweet them your questions.
As a general rule, I don't know TSA stands, but I'm going to say just don't bring eggnog. Nobody wants it. When you get there, there's no reason to pack it.
All right, hot take, but yes, you can put it in your checked bag if you really want to take it with you if it's going to stay cold.
Or you can bring them in
mini bottles.
We're just getting people sick now is what we're doing, recommending you check. I guess it's going to stay cold in the cargo, but I just don't know if I'm trusting the eggnog in my bag to survive, let alone be good when I get there. Okay, let's get off of the eggnog for a moment, and let's talk about you traveled not that long ago. You went to visit your parents, quarantined beforehand, you tested like crazy, you did all these things. On your Instagram, I remember you putting up photos of what you were doing when you travel. Not only did you have a face mask on, you had like one of those clear welder's masks on. You went all out. And I don't know that the TSA recommends that, but what would your personal recommendations be for being as safe as you can as you travel when you're worried about on the plane, in the airport, all of those things?
What we've seen is that, and especially lately, we've had some headlines where people were on planes with coronavirus. So I think, first of all, there's this sense that people think, oh, it's safe to be on the plane. There's definitely a risk of being on a plane. So wearing a mask at all times is a really important thing. I personally did not eat or drink a single thing on my cross-country flight. I made sure to chug water before I got on the plane, after, but not removing the mask, not touching my face while I was on board. And yes, wearing a face shield isn't something that medical professionals are like, you have to do this. But they say, you know, it's kind of uncomfortable, but if you're willing to do it, that is going to give you some extra protection because you're protecting your eyes, which can be places the virus can get in. Other things to do, washing your hands constantly, using hand sanitizer on board. The airlines are handing out little single serve packets of hand sanitizer depending on the airline. So just maintaining that hand hygiene throughout. But if you're sick, do not travel. We keep seeing headlines of people getting on planes with the virus. So if you are feeling sick, please do not travel is a huge piece of advice. But if you are traveling, you can also bring 12 ounces of hand sanitizer in your carry-on bag. That's the only thing that TSA has really changed about what they allow in your bag now. So bring so much sanitizer you can share with your whole family. Just bring a bunch of it on.
So that's interesting because 3 ounces is normally the limit for anything liquid. But when it comes to hand sanitizer, they're allowing 12.
Mm-hmm. Yep. During the pandemic, that has been a change.
Yeah, no kidding. And so, you said you chugged water beforehand, which meant on a cross-country trip, no doubt at some point, you had to get up and use the washroom. How did you feel about that? Because that's a tough situation because other people have been in there and you know they clean it beforehand, but for goodness sakes, it's a cross-country trip. Did you feel okay after that?
I didn't feel at the time super panicked about it. However, I have done some interviews after with health experts who say actually that is something that you should be concerned about. So if you can not use the restroom while you are traveling, that is a better thing to do, unfortunately. So you're just going to have to maybe don't chug all the water and be very dehydrated as you're traveling. But they do recommend not using those because, you know, they are getting some light cleaning, but it's not the cleaning you expect. And unfortunately, there are also aerosols in the air that you have to be concerned about. So if you can avoid it, avoid it. If you do hand hygiene, mask, don't take your mask off in the restroom. Just keep it on.
D.C. to L.A., that's got to be close to a 6-hour flight, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So
that would have been a tough one.
It was one of those things. Yeah. If you start to think about like, oh, I can't drink any water right now or I can't use the restroom, it's probably going to make you want to do it more. So just try to distract yourself, mind over matter.
We're speaking with Natalie Compton. She is from the Washington Post. She's a travel writer for their By the Way travel destination, they call it. She's shared recently some hotel tips. If you miss traveling, hotels have been sharing the fun things that they make that you could make at home. And then she's also answered some questions about people wanting to head to a wedding. Should I travel? Should I do it right now? We'll talk about what she has been telling people.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue.
Your family is going to be a little blue without you if you aren't traveling this holiday season. Natalie Compton is with us from the Washington Post. You can follow her on Twitter at NatBCO, at NatBCO. She's a great follow with lots of good information on travel and her other adventures. Natalie, you shared, I don't know if you wrote on it, but you certainly shared something that hotels were putting out, kind of their favorite treats and things that they make that you might want to make at home since you're not able to visit the hotels themselves. Was there a favorite you had out of all the craziness that was in that story?
Oh, yes. I loved researching that one because it was not a bleak travel information story for once. It was something light and joyful. So hotels are really special to go to during the holiday season. They like decorate better than your house. They like make these beautiful things. And I think my favorite things of the list were the different drinks that you could make.
Yeah.
And there was a great Christmas sparkling wine glog, this tradition like mulled wine drink that they top with champagne. So if you head over to the Washington Post today, there's a big list of like great spiked hot chocolate, Christmas pudding from Claridge's in London, which is just a delight, and many delicious things. But yeah, I think spiking hot chocolate is the easiest way you can go.
In fact, I remember on social media, you were saying that you'll be doing some of this over the holidays. Are you really going to make one of these things?
Well, I think spiked hot chocolate is a must, and I'm hoping to gather all the information or all the ingredients to be able to do the glog, which I have about half of them, but it is quite the endeavor to get some of those other spices. So it's an ambitious mission that I hope to carry out.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, that'll make the holidays a little more fun. And you are not traveling for the holidays, right? You decided you're staying put?
I drove up to New York to my sister's family's house to be able to help out with my niece. But yeah, had been quarantining ahead of time, tested before, tested when I got here, the whole rigmarole, wearing a mask when I got here, not sitting at the same table, yada, yeah, yada, all those great protocols. But yeah, it was unfortunate that we had to not have my parents fly out for the holiday. So they are still in California, unfortunately.
Are you staying at your sister's long enough that you will be able to take the mask off and really enjoy being around everybody? Or that's the tough part, is like, if you can stay for long enough, you can say, okay, I'm quarantined with you guys now. Now we can just be normal together. But will you get to that point, or will you have to go back home before then?
Yeah, I'm already at that point, fortunately, and we'll be staying longer because we get to work remote. You can just do these long haul visits, and I have a little room here that feels like my little maid's quarters, and I just hang out and help out around the house. I'm just a team player here.
Well, that's good. Excellent. Well, that's good to hear. And, you know, it's funny, all the times I've talked to you this year, when you have traveled, you're getting tested before, you're getting tested afterwards. How many COVID tests have you taken this year? Do you know?
That's a good question. I should have kept a tally because people joke that I have gotten tested more than anyone they know. But I'll take that title because it has, you know, given me some comfort, even though it's not your free pass to travel. It is something that helps give me comfort in addition to those other precautions.
Yeah, for sure. And have they all been nose swabs, or have you taken various different types of tests?
I've taken mostly the nasal swabs. I have done a saliva one that they get through your cheek, but I've also donated blood throughout the pandemic, and they will test for antibodies when they do that, depending on where you go. So I've done a blood test as well, technically, has come back negative.
With the vaccine rolling out, and it's going to be a while before, you know, enough people get it to really feel comfortable, but what's kind of your personal threshold on when you'll, I know you've traveled, but you've taken insane precautions to travel the few times you have. So when, what point do you have to get to where you'll feel a little bit more comfortable with the idea of getting on airplanes again?
That is a good question because I don't know. I guess the once Fauci gives me the go-ahead, maybe I look to that guy for some guidance. You know, he's getting the vaccine, I'm getting the vaccine. But I think just as we start to see how things are unfolding with, you know, it'll make me feel a lot better when all the healthcare workers, all of the people who are more at risk get the vaccine, sure. And then I will feel more comfortable venturing out knowing I'm not going to be harming them by me leaving the house. So right. I don't know. It's a great question. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, for something like summer 2021, but who knows? Everything is so complicated.
Yeah, it really is complicated. And you do advice for the travel destination, by the way, for the Washington Post, and one of the recent ones was about going to a wedding and should I go. What was your advice mm-hmm. to the people on that?
Well, so we launched this new advice column. This is our fourth installation, so if anyone is feeling like they have these concerns regarding travel, either pandemic related or anything, we've helped people with refunds, different questions, send them in. We would love to help you solve these problems. So I take the question to the appropriate experts and get them solved. So this last person was asking about going to a 50-person wedding in New Orleans, which to a lot of people would be like, no, don't do it. But for they sure. were genuinely concerned. They wanted to know, can I fly from Austin and then get a car and drive? And I took the question to a couple of different experts in New Orleans from the health department and an epidemiologist who said, really, this is not a good time. And it's hard for them to say that because New Orleans is such a hospitable place where they love visitors and they love parties. And
yeah.
it goes against their nature to say, don't come. But they have had a really rough go during the pandemic in the beginning. It was a really horrible scene down there. So they have gotten out of that and still have cases, but they're not in the same boat as a lot of places. So they're feeling the pressure of having tourists come in and behave badly has been a repeat concern that they've had throughout the pandemic. So the main moral of the story was don't travel. If you do, a lot of experts were saying the wedding itself might not be the problem if you're wearing a mask and it's outside, but it's all the things around the wedding, particularly the rehearsal dinner. That is something where people are going to have their masks off, eating near each other. There's guests from around the country who came to the party. So there's a lot of risk involved in the traveling to the wedding, going to the reception, going to these different parties. So yeah, it was not a yes. It was don't go. Please don't go.
If people have questions for that service that you guys do at the Washington Post, where should they email them or how do they find out how to submit a question?
If you go to bytheway.com, that is a way that you can access it. I don't think we have a good little short link, but you can tweet to me at NatBeCo and I can help you out. But we would love to get more questions. There are ones about train travel and we've helped people solve Airbnb refund issues. So yeah, just tweet me at NatBeCo.
At NatBeCo, Natalie Compton for the Washington Post. Always great to talk to you. Have a wonderful holiday with the little ones in the house where you are visiting. You put up cute pictures all the time. I hope you have a great holiday and can't wait to talk to you in the new year.
Yeah, you too. Happy holidays.
All right, Natalie. Have a great day. Natalie Compton from The Washington Post at NatBeCo on Twitter. And if you have a question about travel, you can send it there. I'm Matt Bubala in for Anna DeVlantes. We'll be back tomorrow for your Christmas Eve. We'll talk about the mom from A Christmas Story and giving her due. Michael Phillips from The Tribune will have movie reviews and Blair Kamen reviews the year in architecture.